All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. This is really hard for me because normally I'm staring at the computer screen and I'm here with a room full of people. So tonight we're going to watch the Godmakers, and we've assembled a all-star cast. First, let's start on this side of the room.
Hi, I'm Chris. I was a Mormon for 41 years, and I've been an ex-Mormon for a year.
A year?
A year.
That must, officially.
Officially, oh, an ex-Mormon for a year.
You were a Hellraiser before that.
So. For at least 10 years. Oh, right. I really, really yelled and, screamed my way outside of the church.
All right, welcome, Chris.
Thanks.
And this is Zilpha. You've probably heard me before, but maybe not. John and I are married. We've been out for about 6 years, something like that. And on to you.
Hey, it's me, Tom. What's up? And I still go to church.
This is Jim. As you know, I've been out of the church for about 6 years now. So.
This is Niall. I've been ex-LDS probably for about 18 months or so now.
Just a baby.
Just a baby, but I'm a proud anti-Mormon.
I'm Nathan. I'm Niall's brother, and I've been out of the church for about 2 years, plus 10 years, depending on how you measure. I am a proud atheist, and I'm actually excited to be here.
I'm Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you guys tonight. It's a real honor. I was active for about 32 years. Found that there was some things I couldn't resolve, and my integrity wouldn't let me stay. Couldn't say I believed, and now I'm an atheist. It's been, 2 or 3 years.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Now, like I said, tonight we're just about to start our screening of The Godmakers. About 2 or 3 months ago, I interviewed Ed Decker. That was a hoot. I would invite everybody to go down and check out the interview with Ed. Zilph and I had the opportunity of watching The Godmakers before we interviewed Ed, just to make sure we were up on what it was all about, and we were both very surprised. Now, I've gone around the room, and no one here other than the banned cartoon has actually seen The Godmakers. We've all heard the rumors. We all got warned off it in Young Men's and Young Women's, but now we're going to watch it. So I'm gonna stop the tape. We're going to watch it. We're going to come back to you immediately. Any last words before we jump in? You ready for your testimonies to be shaken? We can jump on that after. All right, let's get it started. All right, so we just finished 56 minutes of pure entertainment value with the Godmakers, and now we're ready to go. So. You know, I said I saw it before. What was it as bad as y'all thought it'd be?
This is Brian here. The expression that came to mind is delightfully dated. A lot of the material, I mean, the outfits and the styles. I mean, it's very early '80s. I was surprised at the amount of information that was pretty straightforward, that felt good, and I was surprised in the direction that he went with some of the information. It's just sort of, it's an appeal to ridicule, a lot of it, where he just was putting things in the most extreme ways. And when you put that out there, as a member, you're just going to find it so distasteful because you don't agree with what he's saying. When he's saying like, oh, it's based in the occult. Well, if you don't agree that it's based in the occult, you're going to write the guy off like right away, and you're going to dismiss everything else he has to say, which is a shame because some of the information was spot on.
This is Nathan. The biggest thing that popped out to me of this, I'd seen this, at least I thought I saw it. I saw a part of it years and years and years ago. And of course, when I was more of a member, and I completely discounted it. However, after seeing this and after being involved in some of the post-Mormon outreach Christian stuff, what I realize is, wow, they don't update their material. This stuff is 30 years old, and they're still trotting out the same horse here. It's really, and I can get, I've got more on that. I just want to try to say, wow, they just, it's.
Horses are updating all the time.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, you know, it's, I mean, we all have our pet sacred cows. This one is not mine, but I see it in other areas where it's like, look, stop bringing out things that have been tackled. You need to, I mean, have you guys talked with a Mormon in the last two decades? I mean, really? I mean, I know it's a 30-year-old film, but they're still saying the same stuff.
That was my immediate impression, actually, was that it was the same issues, and coincidentally enough, there's not been a whole lot that has changed. I mean, the apologists are still covering the same material, the Book of Abraham. We're still talking about occultic issues with Joseph Smith. So it was kind of amazing to me that it was all the same thing. Nearly 30 years have gone by. We're still talking about the same things.
This is Niall. The thing about this movie, and I hope I don't get too many things thrown at me here, is it's no more or less honest than the typical Mormon film. The Mormon films blatantly lie in the few areas as well. You know, this film was mostly accurate. It was just presented in a pretty negative, kind of infantile sort of way. But if you look at it, you just take that and you charge it the other way, and you've got like every Mormon seminary film you've ever seen in your life. So, you know, before you throw stones at Ed Decker, I mean, the guy's like, maybe he's got more Mormon in him than he realizes. But if he hasn't updated in 30 years, I mean, has the Mormon church changed? I mean, fundamentally, are they more honest? Are they more relevant? Well, but they're both the Mormon church and the EVs are, you know, equally honest and dishonest. Why change the dance when they've been waltzing it quite well for, you know, 150 years?
I think that raises the question, you know, who is the audience for this film? Is this something that Ed Decker set out to pitch to Mormons or to evangelicals who get behind that bandwagon? You know, one word kept coming over and over in my mind, which is passion play. You know, this is the updated version, and instead of attacking Jews, they're attacking Mormons, you know, in this kind of, you know, 1980s slick fashion. So that was, you know, the big thing for me is, who is Ed Decker talking to, and who does this appeal to the most?
Well, it seems clear that he is targeting the investigator. He's trying to go out and say, look, you're looking into this thing. Let me show you what they really believe before you invest yourself. It really wouldn't work for the diehards. I mean, I've seen films. This is not the... There have been numerous other films created in the last few years that really isn't any different. In fact, Floyd McKelvey, one of the people on that show, popped up and I said, wow, he's still around and he's still making films like this. But it is. It's either preaching to the choir for the evangelical fundamentalist crowd or for those looking for Mormonism.
I mean, but the people in the audience who would be, you know, theoretically at a evangelical church, I think they'd already have some firm commitments in, you know, being saved and whatnot. Yeah, there is that segment of individual out there that, you know, can go ahead and say, yeah, well, Mormonism could appeal to me. But I think they've reached the kind of the breaking point of being susceptible to, you know, to the message of Joseph Smith.
Well, I was going to kind of say the opposite of that, that there is a lot of appeal, and the way the church presents itself, and they mentioned in the film, and the church still presents itself as very family oriented. And if you know Mormons, you know they're good people, and they seem to have it all together, and they've got a close family, and their kids are excelling in school or whatever. And you might get interested in maybe what they have to offer over there.
you know, when we sat down and watched it, I expected it to be just like way over the top, because that's what it's always portrayed. You know, missionaries go around saying, oh, you know, they showed it in the church before we got there, and baptisms increased 200% because it was so over the top that it sent people running. I don't see it as that way. I mean, and we'll go through some of there's some silly mistakes they make. There's some obvious exaggeration they do. But I think, like it's been said, it's sort of on par with all the other stuff that's out there. It's on par with the stuff you see on the boards. And it's, except for the cartoon, and there's some other things when they talk about the space Jesus.
How is the cartoon fundamentally different than the god-awful legacy productions in the Joseph Smith building?
At least the legacy production wasn't going after another religion, really. It was just sugarcoating, whitewashing history from the Mormon perspective.
Well, I mean, legacy is all like schmaltz and bathos, right? So it's not necessarily about that. It's just wrong. It's just about, you know, emotion, right? It's like Mormon porn, you know, and but you know, the cartoon, you know, has all these things like Starship Kolob and stuff, you know, that's, no one would agree to that. It's an obvious misrepresentation of the belief.
Well, I think that the cartoon has a lot of speculation in there. I mean, they put a lot of emphasis on the man become God and the celestial sex. I mean, that seems like a lot of speculation that,
hey, I was looking forward to that.
I'm not trying to rain on your parade. You can still have it, I guess.
The only thing I found in the cartoon was a problem was that the idea that Jesus was definitely a polygamist, I couldn't find anything else in the cartoon that was factually untrue.
Well, I think one of the things that Decker does, and a lot of evangelicals do this, is they take beliefs from like the 19th century, you know, things that Heber Kimball and Jedediah Grant preached over the pulpit, and they present them as if they're still done. I mean, I remember when I picked up a copy of The Godmakers when I was a teenager, I thought, this is not my religion. It took me a long time of studying before I realized that it was, but it was just an old, old version of it. So when they present in the cartoon that Mormons, you know, still believe that, you know, like God went mac and went on Mary, I mean, there's still Mormons who believe that, but it's not a real common one.
Yeah, I think the problem that they run into is Ed Decker and you know, those who produce The Godmakers are kind of like Wile E. Coyote, and the church is more like the Roadrunner. You know, they're just always this close to getting them, you know, but they just zoom right past, you know, the church just zooms right past Wiley, and he's left holding a knife and fork still, you know.
Well, if we want to talk about the inaccuracies, we want to go down a list of inaccuracies. First off, I wrote down that there was an elite few that got to enter the temple. Well, that seems like kind of a jump to just temple recommend holders, I would think.
But I think they were including the people outside of, and at that time there were fewer temples than there are now. And so a lot of the membership, even if they were temple worthy, they didn't have access to temples. They couldn't get there.
Yeah, all right. Fine.
All right, I got one. This is Brian again. There's one point where he says that Mormons believe that Joseph Smith has done more for the salvation of any other man, including Jesus Christ. That's not what Mormons believe at all. The quote is, save Jesus Christ. Save only Jesus Christ.
I think there is a quote by someone else that said that I think that Joseph Smith actually mentions that he... Yes.
The point is they won't say it.
Thank you. I think Joseph Smith says that he did more for mankind, including Jesus, at one point. I can't remember.
Whether it's including or saved, there was definitely no question that Joseph Smith had a very overly healthy image of himself. But, yeah. But as the biggest inaccuracy was, I've never heard this before, about demons appearing to Mormons during baptisms for the dead.
The demon didn't appear to you?
No.
I thought that happened to everybody.
Wouldn't they just be talking about a spirit, like from the grave kind of thing?
You know, I've heard...
I didn't hear the demon part.
Well, they
He wasn't talking about demons. He was talking about the LDS trying to reach out to the dead. And I know that for many years when I was going through the temple, they would encourage people to try to sit in the celestial room and think about, you know, like their great-grandmother or whoever as a way of trying to reach out to the dead. I think that was a stretch, but
well,
I think that's what you're referring
to. I've heard the Mormon urban legends about the dead appearing to the workers and saying, yes, I'm ready for this work. However, come on. I mean, this is stretching even for that urban legend.
Yeah, if he said demon, then that would be a weird way of saying it. But I was just going to say my brother, a bad grandmother. My brother one time was in the celestial room, and he had just performed some people's work. And he said there was no breeze, and the air conditioner wasn't on or anything, and a few of the chandelier crystals started wiggling, and he was sure it was a thank you from the... from beyond the grave.
Was it the LA temple?
No. Why? What happened there?
A seismic event.
So that was a recurring theme. I thought that they go into the cultural urban legends a lot. And if I remember, I'd say, well, that's not strictly doctrine. It's not in the scriptures. It's not relevant to our salvation. I think if I was a member watching it, I that would be a big takeaway. Be like, well, you're just taking all these urban legends and throwing them out there as if they're some official doctrine, and they're really not.
Mormons were definitely not the target audience for this, believing Mormons. Neither were atheists or agnostics, because they tried to appeal to scripture and they tried to appeal to all of these other things, which would be completely ineffective.
The real Jesus, not the Mormon Jesus.
That was the quote
the real
I wrote
Christ.
Down, is that they said that Mormonism is so far removed from Orthodox Christianity, as if some objective standard of Christianity exists.
Yeah, they lost me every time they started trying to redefine Christ or Jesus. They just completely lost me.
But that's how they feel when they step into a Mormon church and they see that the Jesus that they know is being redefined by the Mormons. That the Mormons see Jesus differently than other Christian denominations do.
I'm on the Christian sides on this one.
You are?
Yeah, I definitely feel that Jesus Christ, especially in mainstream Jesus Christ, is completely misrepresented and twisted by the Mormon church.
So do you think Mormons are Christian then, Niall?
No, I don't.
Not at all? Before or after?
There is Christians if you put a robe on a Mr. Potato Head and nailed it to the wall.
Jeez.
Okay, but I've seen both sides of that too. I mean, I've heard the Mormons say that they're Christians because they believe in Christ, but I've also heard the Christian. The thing is with evangelical Christians, the thing I have a problem with is that they've co-opted this term. I mean, this is a subject for a different discussion for a different day. But to say that Mormons aren't Christians, they also say Catholics aren't Christians and mainstream Protestants aren't Christians and anybody who doesn't believe in their flavor of grace is not Christians. Exactly.
Well, okay, so going back down to this list, the Mormons are Christians or not, I couldn't believe how emphasized they were with the man becomes God in doctrine. That seemed to be a running theme all through it.
It's called the God makers.
Well, fine. But it seems like a kind of doctrine that at least in the last 10, 20 years that the church is definitely distanced from. So, the celestial sex. One of the things in the cartoon, it says that the neutral people that were in the spirit world or in the preexistence became black. I think that's a Bruce R. McConkie speculation.
All over the place.
It's been
fun. Yeah.
But I was going to say about the, what was your second thing on your list? Man becoming God. Well, Ed Decker might take responsibility for the fact that the church has kind of backed away from that doctrine.
And this is really ironic to me, because back in the day, the idea that man could become a god was the appeal of Mormonism. I mean, for the first 50, 70 years of the church, that is what they lived for. They wrote books about it. They talked about it. This was something that empowered the average Mormon to do better, because he was going to become his own god. I remember when I was a youth, I was excited to create my own world. It was very exciting. I wasn't excited to have a whole bunch of children. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I left the church. But I was really excited with the idea that I could have my own world. So if they are changing from that, then that is something that's significant in my opinion.
Well, I don't know if we teach that, actually.
I want my own world.
Well, one of the others that really took me off guard was, I think that he was it was in the cartoon, and he was quoting that Jesus was a polygamist, was married to Mary, Martha,
We already did. But we didn't talk about it online.
I mentioned it.
Yeah, Niall did. All right, good job, Niall.
That was the only thing I found disturbing, other than apparently when you become a demon, your hair gets messed up.
your hair turns into horns.
How about all the female wives? There were all these beautiful blondes running around. That's pretty impressive.
And they definitely weren't wearing garments.
Well, you notice they were all clones too.
but those teachings show up. The I was watching something on the FLDS, and they were talking about the blonde thing. That for them, the more fair skin, the more blonde or redheadish. So these are folk doctrines that have been around. We saw some exaggeration there, but I didn't see anything that Ed Decker just pulled out of his hat. You know, everything has been kicking around. I mean, if anybody saw, I mean, I've heard the three brides of Christ, and I've heard all that stuff.
Oh yeah, in fact, I hear quite a bit about the satanic symbols all over the temple and throughout the temple square. And I remember going through there, and I'm going, well, I know there's Masonic symbols, but what specifically is satanic? It's not being pulled out, but I mean, it is heavily exaggerated, as you mentioned.
So let's talk a little bit about the Satanism. Ed Decker really has three things that he preaches against as an evangelical. Mormons, and to him, they're all the same thing. Mormons, Masons, and Satanists. So I think they go into this, but Decker's done a lot of other things in his ministries to equate Mormonism with Satanism. And as Chris said when we were watching the movie, that's where they jumped the shark. You know, that's where it was just way over the top. Tell us what they did with the Mormo.
Oh, he just had this book of satanic terms, or was it a satanic Bible? And it has the names associated with Satanism, and one of them is Mormo. And people, king of the what?
The ghouls.
King of the ghouls, and those who follow Mormo are Mormons, according to Ed Decker.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of, Masonry and Mormonism, I mean, Ed Decker, yeah. I mean, Ed Decker, I think it kind of just shows his hand a little bit, but that when they were talking about the marks on the garments, he referred to them as occult symbols. He didn't refer to them as, the square and the compass, which are patent, borrowed straight from Freemasonry. So I think it kind of shows his MO to a limited extent of what he runs to when he's explaining certain imagery.
Yeah, he made that jump because to him, Masonry is Satanism, so ergo, you have a compass on your garment.
Yeah.
You have a satanic. And he went through this big thing saying it was a talisman. Well, I think he's talking, and they use the word magic at least 9 times in the film.
Yeah, most of the language that they're using about occultism or magic, I mean, they're all interchangeable and they mean the same thing, to them from an evangelical perspective. There's the great evil, and then there's them. So it's the us versus them being put into film.
If miracles happen to them, it's not magical. But if miracles happen to other people, then it's magical.
Sounds like an atheist talking right there.
Well, I take offense, I actually don't take offense, but, when people take issue with the fact that people describe the garment as magical, I don't think Mormons really consider it magical. I think it's very similar to the way a lot of Christians consider their cross. There's a lot of people...
Sacred, you mean?
Well, sacred, and they you can watch any horror movie and see that it's a protection, and it's a talisman, and I think Mormons consider their garments very similar. And so I think it's a distortion that since Ed's spent 20 years in the church, he should know better than doing that.
I also want to mention, it was right before that part, I think, with the magic underwear, where he talks about... I think that's a pretty good segment about the church in court encouraging divorce. I think that's a bit exaggerated. I think that if some bishops might do that, but I don't think I'd blame the church entirely for that, and especially not nowadays. I think that, at least in the last 10, 15 years, that the church has come out and said, you can't say that sort of thing, and will get us in legal troubles.
In the last how many years?
What did I say, 10, 15?
10, 15 years.
Well, maybe it was 30. I don't know.
Ed Decker might take... responsibility for that change too.
Yeah, but don't you think that the church wasn't exactly issuing policy?
I think the doctrine of the church led bishops to give that advice based on love for the person, because they knew that then they couldn't get exaltation based on the doctrines of the church.
But if a local leader is saying something like that, like, I think you should divorce your spouse.
Don't you think that the
finger shouldn't be pointed necessarily at the church, but at the leader?
No, I think it should be pointed at both.
Both?
Yeah.
Hmm. I do. I kind of.
I think if you have a lay leadership, you can't separate the two. Because, you know, for me, my bishop, my stake president, they are the church.
But the church will definitely say they need to separate the two.
True. But, I personally know people who are divorced who say firsthand that the bishop advised their spouse to divorce them. So it happens. Hopefully it's rare and it's getting rarer. You're right. The church has taken steps to make sure this happened. But to me, that's a sign that it did happen. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to deal with it.
Another thing you might want to consider is, why are there New Order Mormons if they were free to leave the church?
Okay. Well, well, it's not. Listen. Well, no. Okay, I'm not saying that the church is necessarily directly to be criticized for that.
So these people are so mentally unstable, they have to invent this myth to torture themselves with. Where do you think they're getting this idea from?
I think he just did, huh?
No, I mean, if where did you get the idea from, or where do the noms get the idea from that they could lose everything that they have, if not from the church?
Well, you're generalizing there. Not all of them feel that way. And all I'm saying is, it's just like what we've always said. Every ward is different. Every bishop is different. Every stake president is different. If you're in a good ward, then you can be a nom and probably be pretty happy. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, yeah. So I think you do have a point. I think it is overemphasized as if that's the default advice of bishops. And I don't think it is. But I know it does happen. That advice does come from bishops. And the bishops are a product of the church's council. I mean, they're not coming up with that from their own ideas or their own marriage. I mean, they're getting that, they're taking those cues from the church, and some take it more severely than others would.
Well, I guess, but you're getting into a weird speculation area. I mean, some are taking certain cues from the church, but some aren't. I mean,
well, yeah, because they're free to make these distinctions.
Because you can even trace it back to, okay, let's say this stake president is instructing his bishops and his stake to encourage divorce. Well, okay, then it goes up to the stake president, but maybe the station leader or district leader doesn't say that.
Well, I mean, the fact remains that there are families that have this experience where they have been told.
Sure.
And there are families who don't get that from their bishops. I mean, there's a mix.
Well, and to me, this is one of those other big things in the film. It's a pot and kettle thing. Because, you know, and they even one time say, Utah leads the country in venereal disease and depression and divorce. My understanding is that evangelicals have the same problem with the same issues.
Yeah.
The divorce is high among evangelicals, the venereal disease, teenage pregnancy. So you might be hitting on an issue that just conservative religious people have. And, you know, so they go through and...
Yeah, live in Mississippi for a few years, you know, you'll see that all that and more.
So my point is that to them Mormonism is bad. So they look at these things and say, "All right, the Mormons have divorce." Okay, but the same thing would split up an evangelical marriage.
This is true, and they kept on harping about how the church talks about being a family religion, but that all they do is split religions apart. And I kept on thinking, "Well, that's just everybody." I mean, you know, families are split apart regardless of what religion they are, and families continue. The trending is that families are becoming more split apart, and it really has nothing to do with religion.
Well,
it doesn't excuse the church, and I don't think that the church, I don't think church ecclesiastical leaders are actively at this point going out and telling people to divorce. Again, however, there is where the rubber meets the road, where the theology is. that you're to be a family forever. And if you have someone who falls outside of that and who falls outside of the ceiling and who falls outside of the activity rate and the tithing and all of those things, you have the cultural pressure already in place. And I think that's what a lot of people who have this fear that they're going to lose their family and lose all of these things, that's what they're reacting to, is that cultural feel that I'm different. I'm going to be ostracized from my tribe because I am different.
I guess what I would say as far as this church leader separate from the church itself, I wouldn't say that, like John said, you can't point at one or the other. You kind of have to indirectly point at both. And I say that the percentage kind of wavers. And I think that the church leaders in a lot of those divorce cases probably have more like 70-80%. Speculation. Well, sure, it's speculation. But I think that even in some cases, a bishop will do something terrible, make a decision that'll ruin an entire family, that the church would say, oh, we would have never told him to say that.
Well, guess what? That's his prerogative, because he is supposed to be over his flock, and he's supposed to be able to get revelation that will help and guide and direct his flock. So he's been given certain licensing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the church put him in that situation to be a judge in Israel.
Right.
And, you know, he takes that calling very seriously. And if he sees somebody's spiritual and eternal progression, you know, come into play, he's going to act with what he's been coached to do.
The only time I can figure out where a bishop would advise to divorce is if that bishop has made a judgment that the unbelieving spouse or whatever is either a threat or a harm or something of that sort to the spiritual salvation of the person he's talking to.
But just by leaving the church, a lot of people would consider them a threat.
They are threats.
Yeah.
They're
so.
A threat.
And a threat to the neighborhood and the city and the state and everything.
One thing that while I kind of tangent away from this a little bit, I want to make sure that I mention that I was actually very impressed with Sandra Tanner. I thought her delivery and the things that she said was actually pretty spot on and pretty accurate. I was waiting for her to kind of make some leaps, and I'm like, oh yeah, right, that's an anti-Mormon right there. But she kind of laid it out, and I couldn't disagree with a lot she said.
While we're talking about stuff like that, when they first open the scene and it's the attorneys and they're discussing a case, I was very excited because I thought, oh, this is going to be like the case for Christ, you know, like Lystra Bell, and it's going to be all laid out in this, you know, great litigation scenario. And it was just horribly disappointing from that aspect. And it very sensationalistic in their language. That was another thing that was very off-putting to me.
But you know what my favorite part of the film is? So for those who haven't seen it, Ed Decker and Dick Baer go, the premise of the story, and it's intercut with just plain old documentary things, and then Ed's comments about the film, and the editing is really amateurish. But the main thrust of the film is that Dick Baer and Ed Decker, playing themselves, go meet with these two attorneys. It ostensibly to try to what? Sue the church to shut them down for fraud, or it's never quite clear what they're going after. And the attorneys keep saying throughout the everything that Ed and Dick are saying, they keep saying, oh, that's just too weird to believe. You know, so Ed is saying things over the top, and the attorneys are kind of like the voice of reason. I don't think Ed intended that irony, because they keep saying, no, you're just making that up. That's just too wild to believe. So it was a very ineffective method.
Yeah, one of the things in that the dialogue, kind of, I kind of had an issue with, was there was, I think it was the Mr. Baer character, where he mentions that how you know, Mormons have the freedom of religion to believe what they want, so how can they believe in this? And that, I really had an issue with that, because this is, I think, one of the fundamental issues we have today. Do they think that we have freedom of religion?
Yeah, I took a big, I wrote this down because I was so taken aback. It says, why should they have the freedom to, and then, which, you know, I don't know, it's them showing their hand. At being so angry at people having different beliefs than them, which I think is the most saddest part about the Godmakers.
Although you really can't fault, I mean, it's not just the evangelicals. I'm reminded of a recent talk by Boyd K. Packer where he basically said the same thing about other Christians. So,
yeah, I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but the appeal to ridicule, it strikes me as so ironic that it's really easy to appeal to the ridicule of every other religion out there. But my own makes perfect sense. Like in the first person, it's always perfectly sensible. But those other beliefs are so silly. And it's hard for me to take that from, you know, an Orthodox Christian. Like your beliefs couldn't be cast in a similarly dismissive light.
Well, to
I was going to say, at the end of it, when they did this appeal to, oh, I felt dead in the church, and all of a sudden I'm alive in Christ, and they start with this evangelical spiel. Then they pull in Kip and his story, you know, as if they're going to pull, as if I'm supposed to feel the burning in the bosom because of it. The irony, was just too much for me.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next with the Kip story. Now, did anybody catch his last name? Ellison or something like that. So they bring it up early, and then they end with it, like Chris just said. Now, from what I took from the story, reading between the lines, was Kip a homosexual?
Yes. Well, at least that's the implication.
Well, they specifically didn't say, and this goes to what Brian was saying. The evangelicals are not like the friend of the homosexual community.
I wanted to make sure that was pointed out, as that this it rings very close to home for me.
So they sort of lift that out. They say it was something sexual, but they.
They said something like his sexual impulses were in conflict with the church teachings. Oh, we've got something going on here.
Okay, so we just looked it up on the internet. So Kip was the masturbation case. So, but once again, the evangelicals aren't really down with the jerk and the yerkin sort of thing there either. So,
it is 28 years ago. I guess jumping the gun on thinking that he might have had. I guess it was just too good to be true.
I have heard rumors that doing that could lead to that.
Jeez, man.
But anyway, my point being, you know, that's one of those things that very well could have happened in a Baptist community, yeah. And that they would jump all over the Mormons for that. And that's what we talked about: divorce. They talked about women's issues. Evangelicals are not big leaders on the women's movement. They talked about, you know, the things with the youth. So there's a lot of things that you could just spin that whole thing around, and that doesn't really speak to – that might speak to the culture's not so healthy, but it doesn't speak to the truth value of Mormonism.
Yeah, I didn't like that they ended with that whole story too. It seemed like they sensationalized that for their own purposes. But the one thing that I will say that I think it was probably the most troubling thing overall of the movie, and I think that I remember hearing about it, is that the recreation of the temple endowment with the penalties,
right.
and then they all actually
–
because it's very sacred to Mormons. I mean, that don't you think that if a Mormon was watching, they'd be like, oh, that's the part that bugs me. No, but I'm not saying they're not the target audience, but if a believing member was watching that, like, oh, that's the part that's going to offend him the most,
so,
I think.
So to be clear with the movie, they show a portion of the temple ceremony in which they have somebody dressed like a veil worker, which is just wearing a white suit, like a suit jacket, and then they have people in their temple clothes going through some of the penalties that have been removed in the temple in 1990. It's the prayer circle portion.
Since the movie came out, the church decided that those penalty movements might not be very appropriate anymore.
Well, we can't say for sure.
Ed Decker would like to claim responsibility for that one.
It could be. I mean, because that's the and you know, the temple can be a jarring experience. It's not.
Liar is
it. Some people describe it as very beautiful their first time through,
right.
But it's very different than the beige experience that happens in Mormon chapels.
But it also looks like they also recreated some of the initiatory work, and
yes.
They have kind of the shield thingy, and they don't exactly show a lot of the things that they do, like the touching and whatever. But
they didn't show the handshakes, and they didn't tell the actual covenants that Mormons aren't allowed to tell.
Well, except for the penalties and stuff like
they
that.
Showed the penalties.
And that was while it was still in the temple, right?
That is correct. It was in the temple at the time. And as a person who went through before they changed that out, that was one of the most jarring things that occurred during that ceremony. It's the only time ever in my experience with Mormonism that I would consider it cultic, was during that time where I was seeing these violent gestures, you know, these speaking of death and that sort of thing happening just right there in the most sacred place of the church. It was very traumatic for me.
Well, and that's to Niall's point from before. You know, Ed Decker talks about that the church portrays Protestant preachers as a hireling of Satan, and that he's under, and that's straight out of the pre-1990 temple. And people who haven't been through that would say, "You are telling damned lies."
Yeah, I haven't seen that. So
because that's just so over the top that no one would believe it, but it was there.
Did you, Jim, also say that the penalties and stuff like that is directly from Masonry?
Yeah, I mean, speaking as somebody who's been through the Blue Lodge, these are very, very ripped straight off from Freemasonry. And you know, that's just as an aside, but because, you know, quite frankly, it doesn't matter to me where they come from. It's you know, it's anthropologically speaking, it makes sense.
All right, let's... Do you want to say something?
The only thing that I was going to say is that they really... Even though they showed the gestures, the specific things that you vow not to reveal are not the gestures. So they really didn't show in this movie anything that you're specifically not supposed to reveal.
They did show the temple clothing.
But that you never say that you're not going to show that. So really, I think they were a little careful.
No, but they revealed, they showed the sacred word.
Oh, the one that they don't use in the temple anymore?
Yeah, and I'm not going to say it here.
But I don't think that's...
that you're not supposed to reveal that.
They said don't reveal this?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask, who would care about that distinction? Like, if you're a member... Hugely offensive. I mean, that's very upsetting.
They don't care.
Even if it's not specifically, well, I didn't promise not to say this part.
That's true.
Talking about the temple at all is extremely upsetting to a Mormon.
That's true.
If you're not a Mormon, you don't care about the technicality either. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just a latent effect from him being a Mormon.
I think the movie would have been much more effective. And I can't remember Ed said... In my interview with him, but you know, one of the purposes of this, we talked about this, but this gets shown at churches all over the world. I think he said at some point it's been shown 70,000 times or something like that. So I think that if they wanted to accomplish their mission, they should have left that portrayal of the temple stuff out, because I think it sets Mormons such on edge that they're going to say, you know, it's not going to be an effective communication thing. I'm getting, Tom's laughing at me.
No, I'm just, Zilf is pulling that mic out and then not, it's like she's going through a momentary doubt without actually interrupting.
No, well, I don't know if this is, but you said 70,000. That doesn't seem like very many. You had 70,000 downloads last month on Mormon Expression.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we're talking to whole congregations. Yeah, and I download it 5,000 times myself, so.
Inflating the stats.
the one thing that, because it is the God makers, one thing I want to return to, you know, just to because I think it's funny, Starbase Co-op. So I mean, they use the term at one point. They said, I even wrote it down, extraterrestrial hominoids.
Yeah, they did.
You know, so. Oh, so yeah. Brian wrote that too. So the question is, all right, Mormons believe this. Why are Mormons so embarrassed about it, and why is it so funny?
No, the whole pulling the, you know, the alien religion out, you know, is kind of a, you know, a Scientology-esque kind of thing. You know, this is the 1980s. This is, you know, right. This is 10 years before or 20 years before, you know, the Heaven's Gate, you know, cult. You know, and there was, you know, during the 60s, there was this whole run up, you know, to, you know, UFO cults, and I think they're trying to build bridges. You know, Decker's trying to build bridges to other hokey, you know, forms of belief. You know, if you can tie, you know, because you kind of see what Decker's doing.
Then why not tie the link to the number one biggest cult news event of the time, the Jonestown cult? I mean, the that would have been a better.
Because Joan, because the People's Temple largely was an evangelical cult.
Because Mormons are known for Jell-O, not.
So did Mormonism.
Yeah, was Jonestown before or after that? But Jonestown, they grew out of Pentecostalism. So, and you know, always the threat that I think, and I don't want to speak for evangelicals, but Mormonism is like a cult that's stuck in their minds. You know, there's cults that come and go all the time, but you know, as they talk about, the Mormon property holdings and how nice Mormons are, and it's this Mormons are worse than, you know, they seem like normal nice people, but they're not. I mean, that's always the evangelical. Baloney.
I remember reading, this was about the cartoon, where they said that the Mormon Jesus came to the Americas amongst the American Indians or Native Indians. And I remember reading in some apologetic material that was a blatant lie, that it wasn't the Indians per se. Like they were trying to separate the Indians from the Nephites. Because it was the Lamanites are the ones that actually became the Indians.
But
Zilpha.
The Lamanites too, like Samuel the Lamanite.
Yeah, but they're trying to separate Lamanites from Indians. Apologists now, so.
Yeah, and I think that also in the movie they tried to make Joseph Smith look pretty bad.
Oh, I thought he looked great.
That's not hard to take.
You mean the way they drew him?
No.
I thought he looked quite handsome.
I was surprised at how little they covered Joseph's polygamy. I mean, they had lots of material potentially there, and they overlooked a lot of it.
Well, you know, I wrote that down because right in the beginning, I think they made a editorial decision to distance themselves from polygamy because they had in the beginning where. I think it was a former Mormon was saying, you know, everybody thinks of Utah, you know, with the multiple wives, but that's not what Mormonism is. So they distanced that right away.
Yeah, I was going to point out, they clarified the point that the practice of polygamy is not part of the current Mormon church. They just said that that's not how it is now, and they didn't bother going into the history of it.
Actually, he made a point that if they really believed that Joseph Smith and Brigham Young were true prophets still, which they obviously don't because they don't practice polygamy anymore, then they would practice polygamy.
True.
So he did. He was kind of making fun of the Mormons, saying you don't even believe in your original prophets.
But this is straight out of the evangelical playbook of the of Mormon doctrine changing just so frequently and so fast that, I mean, it's the static nature of their worldview that everything has to be exactly the same as it was put forth 3,000 years ago, and nothing ever can change. And if it is, it's the sign of the devil.
Yeah, because I know isn't it in the book of Acts where it talks about having a personal relationship with Jesus, or is that in Matthew, or it's somewhere in there?
Personal relationship with Jesus is not acceptable. Didn't they come out against that at BYU like 30 years ago? Wasn't that specifically condemned?
Yeah, that was Bruce Harvey. But that.
Speculation from the Lawrence Anointed at the Lawrence University.
Well, Ed Decker was making fun of the burning in the bosom thing and saying and telling the people to watch out because the missionaries will say read the Book of Mormon and then they'll ask you to pray about it and look for this burning in your bosom. But then later they were talking about receiving Jesus in their heart, and I wonder what the difference in the feeling is.
Yeah, I wonder how an evangelical is going to convince a non-Christian or a Mormon how are you supposed to get your belief and your testimony of Jesus if not through, you know, your feelings, your inner emotions?
Speaking as someone who studied my way out of Mormonism, it was very frustrating for me to try to find a middle ground. You have the Christian believers who, like you say, they rely on this old book and everything must be, you know, stalwart and the same. And then you have Mormonism, which relies on continued revelation, and you can't nail any type of doctrine to the wall because it's constantly shifting. It was a personal frustration of mine that you don't know what you're dealing with when you're trying to talk about doctrine of the church.
I mean, to speak of the evangelical kind of authoritarian language that they used, I guess, they said that missionaries were coached to use words like God and Jesus, because Mormons don't use those terms ever.
just saying that these terms mean slightly different things to Mormons, but they'll use them on you because you have it, because they're in your vocabulary and they want you to feel comfortable, but you will think of different things than they are thinking of when they use those terms.
I think that's probably true. Actually, it is. I've actually come across a published Mormon to Christian dictionary that actually goes through and details the differences that of the same terminology. I was quite surprised until I found out the Christians, the evangelicals, do the same thing with others. But yes, there definitely is when they say they talk about grace or salvation or a lot of these other things. It was one of the biggest things learning curves when investigating the evangelicals was trying to figure out what they meant when they said that they believed in Jesus.
I went to a Jehovah's Witness recovery site because I had some questions, and it was really interesting going through their threads. They have their own language as well and their own shorthand, and there's all sorts of implied meanings and familiar words that went right over my head. It's fascinating.
All right, so to sort of to wrap it up, I guess, you know, we've sort of hit on the whole. This has become kind of an anti-evangelical podcast, I think. But I mean that's what the film is. My opinion is they have some little technicalities wrong, nothing huge. They like to exaggerate, you know, space station Kolob and that sort of stuff. But really, it's just sort of vanilla, mild fare. The rumors and stories about how terrible this film is, what an impact it's had on Mormonism for the negative and for the positive, I would believe would be greatly exaggerated. And then there's really nothing in there you're not going to see like on the boards every day. You know? Yes.
There's one thing I've been thinking about, and when I was a believing member, and I came across you know, like South Park or a cartoon or something that had what I believed was a misstatement about a name or a place or an occurrence, I always said, oh, they got that fact wrong. But I never bothered to look it up and like do my own research into it. And I wish I had taken the time to identify those things that I disagreed with and then give it a more honest pursuit, like just my own research, because I would have figured my own answers out a lot sooner.
Yeah, think about it. Sandra Tanner actually had all those things right without Google, dude. That's to me. I actually ended that with a lot more respect for her. I mean, she had all those documents in front of her, and she obviously had done her homework backwards and forwards.
Yeah. I mean, Sandra Tanner. At some point, and Sandra, you're still supposed to come on, but at some point, you know, we need to go through because I think the Tanners have been shown time and time again to be right. There's definitely times they've been prone to a little bit of exaggeration, but the classic example is the Hoffman stuff. Salamander letter, they said, no, that's a fraud. And everybody else jumped on the bandwagon, but they were able to ferret that out before anybody else did. So, and I think you're right. She was right on. And I don't know all the details, but apparently sometime after this, Ed Decker's Ministries and Lighthouse Ministries had a falling out, and it was due to sort of factual inaccuracies. So I think the Tanners have stuck to their guns, and this she really looks good in it.
Yeah, she does look good. I think the only thing that I would say is that she obviously has her agenda, just like you have your agenda, John.
I just want to kind of comment about the what this movie meant to me when I was on my mission. And I hadn't even seen it. That's the big thing for me is if I would have seen it, I wouldn't have the archetypal image of a former Mormon, you know, being this, you know, evil ne'er-do-well who, you know, is out to destroy me and my family. You know, even in the campy kind of, you know, exaggerated fashion, I think still, you know, this movie and, you know, a lot of evangelical press did a disservice, you know, to me when I was, you know, before I left the church in giving me something to despise, you know, and something to latch on to fight the good fight, you know, per se.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. Like my idea of the threat that this movie was to my testimony doesn't really compare to what I would see as a believing member. It's just not that threatening.
Yeah, I mean, religion needs the devil. The Mormon Church needed Ed Decker as an archetype. And it almost doesn't matter what's in this film to most Mormons. You know, it's telling that before Zilph and I saw it a couple months ago and everybody in this room, none of us had seen it. You know, but we'd all heard about it and talked about it and da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's just what it plays out. I wonder when Ed's gone, who's going to be next?
John Larson.
John Larson, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, any other last thoughts about the Godmakers?
Did anybody else get a little twinge in their heart when they saw the old facade of the ZCMI Center?
Yeah, and they had Broadcast House in there, which was torn down.
So much memories, and it's gone.
All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues on the website at mormonexpression.com. You can call that number that's there that I'd forgotten. But check out all the other stuff going on, the blogs and the mailing lists. And, oh, we've got some other great things coming up for you at the beginning of the year, so pay attention. And we'll see you next time.